Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is the next in a series looking at the implications on the global economy of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And in today's video, I want to talk about the Russian ruble. Now, there's been a lot of discussion about the Russian ruble. And if you've been following what's been happening with the currency, you'll know that immediately after the invasion started, the currency fell in value significantly. But since the start of March, it's made a remarkable comeback. And a lot of people are saying that's because Russia is a very strong economy, and because they've got a lot of natural resources, it's proving that Russia doesn't need the West and that the sanctions aren't working. But in today's video, I really want to dig down into the detail and get a better understanding as to why the ruble has bounced back so quickly, and whether or not this does indicate that Russia is not being affected by the sanctions, or if there's something else going on. So in today's video, we'll talk about fiat currency. Now, that's a term that you may have heard thrown around a lot. And if you don't understand it, I'll give you the full breakdown as to what a fiat currency actually is. We'll have a look at what's happened with the ruble. We'll look at the charts. We'll then talk about the restrictions that have been brought in by Russia on foreign currency trading, which is definitely having an impact on the valuation of the ruble. We'll talk about the volume of currency that's being traded. We'll discuss what's happened with regards to Russian gold and the proposals for energy payments to be made in rubles. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary as to what I think is actually going on with regards to the valuation of the ruble and what's likely to happen over the next 3 to 6 months. So before we get into all of that, if I could ask you to give me a thumbs up at some point during this video if you're enjoying the content, and also to subscribe if you haven't done so already. And don't forget that I always include chapters in my videos, so if there's a section you're not that interested in, it's really easy to skip over it and move on to the next. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look in the description below, where you'll find links to both Buy Me a Coffee and Patreon. Currency is a generally accepted form of payment and has been around for over 3,000 years. Originally, when currency was first developed, it had intrinsic value. So the old coins were either gold or silver, and the value of those coins equated exactly to the value that was printed on them. However, over time, value of currency has changed. And we now have a system called fiat money, which is a term that you may have heard bandied around. And I thought it was worth taking a second just to explain exactly what that means.
Fiat money is any legal currency that is not backed by a physical commodity, nor does the material it is made of have significant value. The currency's stated value exists because of government decree, hence the name fiat, which comes from Latin and means it shall be. A currency that is fiat money maintains its value from the stability of the government and economy it belongs to, and through intelligent management of money supply by a central bank. Virtually all paper currencies in the world today are fiat money, along with most coin currencies. However, in previous centuries, most currencies were representative currencies, meaning they were backed by gold or silver. With representative currencies, each unit of currency represented an equal amount of gold or silver held by the central government. A government could theoretically only create as much currency as it had gold or silver in its vaults. In those days, a person could take currency such as a dollar to a bank and demand a dollar's worth of gold in exchange. This is called convertibility. Though fiat money has been used periodically around the world since roughly the year 1000, it didn't become the norm until 1971, when U.S. President Nixon declared that the U.S. dollar was no longer convertible into gold. Because fiat money cannot be redeemed for gold, it risks losing value due to inflation. Inflation happens when a government produces too much paper currency and its value drops quickly.
The United Nations currently recognizes 180 official currencies, and each of those currencies has a relative value to each other in the international markets, and that value is referred to as the exchange rate. When trade takes place between two countries, the exchange rate will determine the amount of currency that needs to be exchanged from one unit to the other. And the way that those exchange rates are determined are they are either floating, so they are determined entirely by the market, or they have an element of a fixed value to it. And that's referred to as a pegged currency. When the Soviet Union was broken up in 1991, the Russian authorities decided that they would peg the value of the ruble directly to the dollar. And at that time, they decided that they wanted to peg the ruble using a spread between 5.3 rubles and 7.1 rubles to the dollar. So essentially, the authorities would go into the markets and support the ruble if the value was deteriorating, or if the value was appreciating, then they could start to sell rubles to maintain the valuation somewhere between those two parameters. The success of the Russian economy is highly dependent on the value of its exports, and its primary exports are energy in the form of oil and gas. In 1998, the price of a barrel of oil plummeted and at one point was trading at around $10 per barrel. This had a disastrous effect on the Russian economy and put a lot of pressure on the ruble. And in September 1998, the Russian authorities abandoned the peg system and moved the ruble to a full float. And this led to a huge devaluation in the currency. This chart plots the value of the Russian ruble against the US dollar over the past 3 months. On the 23rd of February, which was the day before the invasion started, the exchange rate was trading at around 81 rubles to the dollar, and that was broadly in line with the exchange rate for the previous month. As soon as the invasion started on the 24th of February, the ruble started to devalue significantly. And by the 7th of March, which was 11 days into the conflict, the valuation had fallen to 154 rubles to $1. So this represented a massive decline in the valuation of the ruble. However, between the 7th of March and the 31st of March, there was a significant improvement in the valuation of the ruble, and it is now trading back at around the same level that it was trading prior to the start of the war. Now, at first glance, this seems unusual. The whole point of the financial sanctions is to try to persuade Russia to stop the war to avoid detrimental impact on the Russian economy. So logic tells us that the valuation of the ruble should be weakened by these sanctions and therefore should be trading at a much lower level than it was prior to this invasion starting. And this is one of the reasons why I wanted to post this video, is to really try to investigate what is going on with the valuation of the Russian ruble and why it has bounced back so quickly and is now trading at the same level that it was prior to the war and is essentially unaffected entirely by the sanctions. What is going on with the Russian ruble? So it seems counterintuitive that the valuation of the ruble has bounced back so quickly at a time when a lot of companies and countries have announced that they no longer want to do any business with Russia. When you look at simple economics, if the demand for anything falls significantly, then usually the price or the value of that product will also fall. Because if supply stays constant and demand falls, then it always brings down the price. So why hasn't that happened to the Russian ruble? Well, firstly, to get to the bottom of that question, we first have to look at the volume of trades. This chart shows both the valuation of the Russian ruble and also the volume of trades over the last 3 months. The blue line is exactly the same graph as I just showed you in the previous section of this video, and you can see the huge deterioration in the value of the ruble through to the 7th of March, and then the rapid recovery in the valuation. But if you look at the bar chart across the bottom of this graph, which is depicted in red and green, this shows the volume of trades over the same period. So you can see that up to the 22nd of February, the volume of trade in the Russian ruble was high and relatively consistent on a daily basis. However, as soon as the invasion started, you can see that there was a dramatic fall in the volumes, and beyond the start of March, the bar chart disappears from this graph. So what that tells us is essentially there is no volume trading in the Russian ruble any longer. So the international markets have essentially closed. The majority of the Western world are no longer buying any exports from Russia, so therefore do not need to buy any rubles. So the massive fall in volumes means that the chart that we're looking at here in terms of the exchange rate is no longer representative of what we were seeing historically. The volume of trades is now much, much smaller and therefore is far easier to manipulate because the volume of currency that you need to buy in the open market is much smaller to maintain the price at the desired rate. Following the invasion of Ukraine, the Russian authorities introduced a variety of restrictions on trade in the Russian ruble. On the 28th of February, the Russian authorities announced that all companies that were exporting products to the rest of the world had to convert 80% of all of their foreign currency back into rubles. The total amount of foreign exports is forecast to be around $600 billion in 2022. And so this new policy is forecast to bring over $400 billion back to the Central Bank of Russia. There are two reasons why the Russian authorities brought this new restriction in. Firstly, it gives the central bank more dollars and enables them to then make some purchases in the open market to maintain the value of the ruble. And secondly, it means that the companies who are handing over dollars in exchange for rubles now have to pay all of their people in rubles and do as much business as they can in the local currency. So it supports the currency. It means that there's more demand for the ruble, that more rubles will be moving around in the Russian economy rather than dollars. In addition to the restrictions brought in for companies, on the 1st of March, all private individuals were told that they could no longer export more than $10,000 directly from Russia. Now, this was brought in to make sure that any foreign currency that was sitting within Russia at that time was not transferred overseas, and therefore the authorities potentially could have access to that money if they bring in further restrictions. And this again was another way of trying to protect the value of the ruble and to encourage all of the residents of Russia to use rubles rather than dollars. In addition to the restrictions on moving money, on the 3rd of March, the Russian authorities introduced a mandatory 30% commission on any transfers of rubles to foreign currency. And this was designed to encourage all of the citizens to continue using rubles rather than trying to convert those rubles into any other currency. Now, as you'll know if you follow the channel, inflation has been running at very high rates in Russia and is now up at around 17%. And when you have high levels of inflation, that usually means that the currency devalues and therefore the real value of any money that you've got in rubles will start to reduce. By introducing a 30% commission, it meant that it was more expensive to transfer the rubles into any other currency than just to let it devalue through inflation. So this commission was introduced to ensure that people stayed with the ruble rather than having a flight away from the currency. On the 8th of March, the Russian authorities also introduced an outright ban on the sale of all foreign currencies in exchange for rubles. This ban was put in place for a 6-month period and is due to end on the 9th of September 2022. This ban was introduced entirely to protect the value of the ruble. If you're unable to sell a currency, then that means that the only trades that are available are purchases of a currency. And that is a way of directly supporting the value of any currency. And it's no coincidence that from the moment that this ban was introduced, the value of the ruble has improved significantly. The low point in terms of the currency market for the ruble was the 7th of March. As soon as the ban was introduced on the sale of any rubles, we've seen the ruble bounce back to the level that it was trading prior to this war starting. Now, earlier in this video, we talked about fiat currency and representative currency. And representative currency was the system that was operated in the olden days, whereby you could exchange a note in any currency for an equivalent amount of gold or silver. Now, as you'll know, Russia has built up a significant amount of gold, and the vast majority of that gold is held in the Kremlin and therefore has not been sanctioned. On the 25th of March, the Russian authorities announced that they were pegging the value of the ruble directly to gold. Now, this was essentially going back to the old system of representative currency. And the Russian authorities announced that 1 gram of gold was now equivalent to 5,000 rubles. Now, this move certainly added to the attraction of the ruble and definitely helped in the exchange rate recovery. However, this policy has obviously proved to be highly expensive for the Russian authorities. And on the 7th of April, they announced that they were no longer pegging the valuation of the ruble to gold and it would go back to a free float system. So you may have heard some people talking about the ruble being pegged to the gold and being backed by gold, but that's no longer the case. That has been abandoned. It was a short-lived event, essentially delivered to try to boost the value of the ruble. We've seen the ruble bounce back, and now the authorities have walked away from that policy. As you'll know if you follow the channel, Russia is a major exporter of natural gas to Europe. It provides around 40% of all of the natural gas that's used. And on the 31st of March, President Putin announced that all future payments for natural gas had to be made in rubles. Now, this was quite controversial at the time because the contracts that are in place state that all of the payments must be made in either dollars or euros, which are the international currencies that all of these commodity items are priced in. But President Putin wanted to increase the demand for rubles and therefore the valuation of the ruble in the currency markets. Now, there's been a lot of consternation, a lot of arguing around this point, and a lot of countries around Europe have stated that they will not be making payments in rubles because the only way to get those rubles would mean dealing with the banks who have been sanctioned in Russia. So this essentially was President Putin throwing down the gauntlet to all of the countries in Europe saying, I'm not going to abide by your sanctions, and actually I'm going to force you to break your own sanctions. Now, the argument is still going on, and it's been reported in the press that payments are still being made in dollars and euros, so therefore the countries involved are not buying rubles. But the benefit that this has had in terms of the valuation of the ruble is that there's been some increase in demand. Some countries, such as Hungary, are talking about making payments in rubles, and it's definitely had a beneficial impact on the valuation of the ruble in the currency markets. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video because there has been a lot of commentary about the valuation of the Russian ruble. And there's been a lot of people saying that the bounce back proves that the sanctions aren't working, that Russia's entirely unaffected and is going to go on to become the biggest economy in the world. But I think when you dig down into the detail, the reality is somewhat different. What we've seen is the Russian ruble deteriorated massively up until the 7th of March and has then bounced back really quickly and is now trading at the same sort of level that it was at prior to the war. But when you look at the facts, you can see that the volume of trades in the Russian ruble is now significantly less than it was historically. We've got an extremely thin market. There's been a huge fall in the volume of trade being done with Russia. Therefore, most companies and countries don't need to buy any rubles because they've got no need for it. So the external demand for rubles has fallen through the floor, and the restrictions that have been brought in by the Russian authorities have meant that all of the people and the companies within Russia are unable to trade out of rubles into foreign currency. There is an outright ban on private individuals being able to sell rubles for foreign currency, and all of the companies that are dealing with exports have had to hand over 80% of all of their foreign currency directly to the authorities. Now, that foreign currency that's then been moved to the central bank is now being used to support the ruble in the very, very thin market that still exists. So it's much easier to manage the exchange rate at around about 80 rubles to the dollar when the volumes are so thin. So that's essentially what's happening right now. We've got a distorted market, which is so small that the Russian central bank is able to easily keep the exchange rate exactly where it wants to because nobody is buying Russian rubles. They are the only people who are making that market. Most of the trading desks around the world are not trading in rubles. It's very difficult to buy rubles right now. The only banks that you can do it with essentially are the Russian banks, and most of them have been sanctioned. So this isn't a real market. The volumes are so small that this is just window dressing. It looks good when the Russian authorities are talking about the valuation of the ruble. It looks like it's come back and it's completely unaffected. But actually, there is no real market in the ruble right now. And I think that's really the takeaway from this video, is that the impact of all of the sanctions on the Russian economy is to wipe out a lot of their international trade. They're still selling oil and gas in the international markets, but there are virtually no exports going into Russia. And the Russian economy will suffer in the long term because a lot of important components and technology comes from overseas. They buy a lot of microchips and high-tech equipment that they can't make at home. And in the long term, the Russian economy will suffer from the lack of those imports. They will see a deterioration in terms of their business and the ability to keep up with modern-day technology. So hopefully this video has given you a bit of an insight as to what's actually going on with the Russian ruble and why the exchange rates have bounced back so quickly, and actually what this means in the longer term for Russia. Because even though the ruble has come back to the same sort of trading level, that doesn't mean that the economy is going to be unaffected over the next 3 to 6 to 9 months. So hopefully you found this video useful, informative and educational. If you've liked what I've said today, then please give me a thumbs up and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already. Hey guys, just a quick update on Joe Blogs 2, the experiment that we're trying to put together to try to find some YouTube stars of the future. Thank you so much for supporting this initiative. We've now got over 1,700 subscribers and the watch time is now up to 2,300 hours. So we're over halfway, we're almost there. We just need another 1,700 watch hours, which sounds easy for me to say, but it's actually quite a lot of watch time. But I know that a lot of you are looking at these videos, you're running them in the background, you're putting them on when you go off to make a cup of coffee or pop out to the shops or whatever it may be. And I really appreciate that, because once we get to that magical 4,000 hours, then we can start this experiment for real. And I know there's a lot of you out there who are starting to make videos, you're starting to put something together. So please continue to do that, because it's going to be really fascinating to see if we can get this channel to be a success, if we can get some of these videos to go viral and get you guys earning some money from video one. Because normally it would take hundreds of videos to get to the point where you're going to get paid. But this initiative means that potentially some of you out there could start earning money immediately, and that would be amazing. And hopefully we can get a lot of you getting into YouTube, and over time you may migrate and decide to start your own channel. But this is a really great starting point to get a feel for how it works, what sort of videos are popular, and what sort of style you should develop for yourself in the long term. So once again, thanks for supporting this idea and the concept, but I do need a bit more watch time. So if you've got time, jump onto Joe Blogs 2, have a watch of one or two of the videos, and please help me with this initiative. So thanks a lot for watching all the way to the end of this video, and I'll speak to you again soon.